We meditated about the First Noble Truth, and we were contemplating about the rising phenomena and the passing away phenomena. Whatever way one try to understand Dhamma, one would eventually will understand this First Noble Truth. It is that big, and I can sort of show that how four nutriments, the edible food, and then the nutriment contact, and the nutriment volition, and then the nutriment consciousness lead to the same, the suffering that described in the First Noble Truth. So, First Noble Truth is very vast, very, very vast. People do not understand it. And so one has to think that I do not know it at all. I'm just a beginner, I'm just a learner. I'm trying to understand this birth is suffering, aging is suffering. It's that deep. Because if you look at those four nutriments, so there are 40 Dhamma parts, the states over there. And then in addition to regarding the agreeable object, an object, lead to another three paths. One lead to the delusion, one lead to the lust, and then the other one to anger. So there will be about 28 Dhamma. So all these Dhamma together simply describing how this thing is come to arise, this birth, aging, sickness and death. And even the virtue, you know, what we have virtue is for, not to have this this suffering. It's really deep. So one would normally, if someone think, I understand birth, then since then, that point forward, nothing will be grown in your mind. Nothing. Because think that I have not understood this. That's why I am going from birth to birth. So the First Noble Truth is really vast. So in the meditation, we were contemplating the how these things come to arise. So remember, we were looking at that one seed delight in this form, welcoming it, remain holy. So we took an example last time. Remember that the TV was the example. If you take I seek delight in form, is I go there and switch on the TV and then I change the channel until I see a good picture and I sit down. So that is seeking delight, and then I'm watching the picture, I'm welcoming it. I ask the other people, if there's a nice picture, come and watch or something like that. So welcoming it. And then remain hold into it. The next week, same time, same thing, you know, switching on that term. I'm not telling that one has to stop this one. One need to observe as an external observer observing this, that this is how they get into this trouble, getting this craving, and having this craving, then there is this existence, right? So over there, this TV is one example. Similarly, we might be, there may be some sort of a food that I like to eat. So again and again I'm preparing it, and I'm again and again I'm enjoying it, again and again I'm getting into the same trouble. This birth, aging, sickness, death sort of scenario. So one need to get many examples. And in the second noble truth, that is this cause of suffering, Buddha gave all the possible, the abstraction for all the possible examples that we can get into this one. You see, we, as a beginner, one would need many, many examples to see, yes, if I say this one, then I can actually see that I'm getting into trouble this way, I get this suffering nature. And so later on, then there is this proper method. The proper method is this. So Buddha said that, and what month is the noble truth of origin of suffering? It is the craving which gives rise to rebirth, bound up with pleasure and lust, finding fresh delight now here, now there. That is to say, sensual craving, craving for existence, craving for non-existence. So this craving for sensual, the sensual craving, you can see that why we go into the birth, we go after death, we go and hold into, you know, the mother is there, the father is there, and then one is sort of absorbed into that thing over there inside the womb, right? So, and then it is nourished and we are holding it. Why we are actually holding and protecting that one? It's like that you are aiming for that. Let's say I am a person who used to eat hoppers, right? And now I don't eat hoppers because I haven't got a body. Now I am waiting, something like waiting to eat hoppers, making it happen, right? So consciousness should be there, associated with that embryo, in that sense. So that the name and shape make it, you know, grow. So the nutriment will lead it to, you know, make it happen. Growing and all those things. So the mother's, you know, the blood, nutriment, all those things. And then these, the edible food that we eat. So, so there is this sensual desire deep into that level. If you think about why would you want some certain one would like a small baby? Everyone actually like a small baby, right? Why? If you think thoroughly, it is sort of a, this, the state close to this origin thing, and your mind hold into that. It hasn't got this much aging. Aging has become inside the womb itself, but you do not see that much. So we are, our mind hold into this, this lead. So we think we have some sort of a thing for babies. It is not. It is that we ourselves has that thing thoroughly cling before and holding into it. So the, remember the if the consciousness is not there associated with this body, then the death can be expected for anyone. So the consciousness is there all the time associated with this body. So, so is that with the babies and so on. So these are very hard and things to explain because you need quite a lot of dhamma to understand in this case. So, this sensual desire is that deep, not only that, that we actually things that we eat. And then this, the craving for existence, then again, that when we have the craving for sensual desire, that itself leads to the existence. Now think about it. If you want to eat hoppers, right, or some kind of a food, cake or whatever thing it is, so you like to eat it, so you collect it, you hold into it. It's like a, you know, the, some sort of a string attached to it and you are actually holding into that. So that means there is some sort of existence, some kind of existence of that mere craving for that thing. So that is the existence. That I want to live in this way. Having eaten something that's so, you know, pleasurable for me for a very short time, is from here to here, that's all. Nothing more than that, in that instant. So we hold into that one. So, this is nice. I want to have it tomorrow. When I say I want to have it tomorrow and day after in my mind, is good. That means I hold the future. When I hold the future, that means the existence. That is called bhava, the existence. So that's one. The other one is that the craving for non-existence. Craving for non-existence is bit deep in the sense, it's like someone see the trouble of this food, for example, the food that I like, the hoppers or whatever thing it is, I find it, maybe I'm eating a rough thing, I have to earn it. I have to go and do the work and, you know, get that particular food. I'm fed up with that scenario. I have to go to work every day and get these things from the shop. And I have to cook. I have to make it happen. Then I think, well, there will be a better life without it. Still, I can exist. I don't want to get out of this thing. But I want to get out of that trouble I have about the food. So, I get out of these material things. Going to space is infinite level consciousness. Oh, I'm going beyond that one, but I still want to exist. So I have a view regarding myself that there is a self, there is a person over here, rather than the rising and passing. I'm thinking that there is something over here. I am. I exist for that person, but I don't want to eat that kind of food, this kind of food. I live in that way. So it is, in simple terms, that's what it is. So if you have three choices for food, I don't need the first one, I don't need the second one, I need a very refined food. So that's why he's going with the mental volition and consciousness level, leaving out the edible food, because it's troublesome. It is troublesome. We should see that the trouble we are getting out of it to earn at that one, and the trouble because of that food, really only 100 years or so. But if you are getting out of that one, one would live, still exist, for millions and billions and billions of years. So they are the Brahmins, and you know, they went to that world because they don't like this bad thing. And it's like a pig. You see a pig eating excrement, and as a human being, you look at it and say, hey, what's this pig is doing? It's a bad thing, and it is eating this sort of thing, right? And like that, we eat this food, and the divine being is looking at you, what disgusting thing these people are eating. It's the same phenomena over there. They look at it that way. They don't like our food at all. Even for yourself, if you cook rice, if you put the rice, you know, rice cooker running and go and meditate, you can see the smell at that time. It's disgusting smell that is coming up. But since we are depending on those things, certain person would feel hunger and all sort of thing. So it's wrong perceptions, things coming up. And so these are the three cravings. So Buddha is now saying, and where does this craving arise and establish itself? Wherever in the world there is anything agreeable and pleasurable, there this craving arises and establishes itself. Wherever there is anything agreeable and pleasing, our eye is enticing and pleasurable. Whenever eye is enticing and pleasurable, this craving gets established. Why is our eye enticing and pleasurable? First of all, eye is enticing and pleasurable, we say so. Our mind, our construction says so. If you take a flower, if you ask two different people, one would say, I like this flower. The other person says, I don't like this flower. So the flower did not have some sort of a quality in it for both to like it. So it is this person is making it up on its own mind, then this is really nice. The other one says, this is disgusting for me. I don't like it. So you can see it's a construction, a complete construction. So having sort of constructed ourselves, we like it. We cling into that one. So then Buddha asks further, and what is there in the world that is agreeable and pleasurable? The eye in the world is agreeable and pleasurable. The ear, nose, tongue, body and mind is the world agreeable and pleasurable. And there is this craving arises and establishes itself. So sight, sound, smells, taste, tangibles, mind object in the world are agreeable and pleasurable. There this craving arises and establishes itself. So Buddha is talking about now eye, ear, nose, tongue and body. Whenever they are agreeable and pleasurable, the craving gets established. Because we get there, because of that our construction, our own construction, a feeling was constructed at that time. Let's say you have eaten something before, a food for example, right? I'm talking about the tongue now. This food, having eaten that, you felt that salt is good or whatever thing, it is good. Now you actually understand that this is good. So that same, similar food you see on a table in somebody else's house. If it is in your house, probably you might have prepared it. And let's say it is in somebody else's house. Then having seen that one, your mind would construct, this is the food that you ate before. Remember that you have not eaten this one at all. You ate something similar, with a similar perception. It looks like the food that you ate. And it constructs the feeling that you had before. It constructs the feeling as, conditioned feeling as feeling. In Pali it's called Sankatam Abhisankaranti. It's constructing this thing. So now you see that this, you get the feeling, what is the feeling, you know, I had that day and all sort of thing. It is all coming up. You don't have to even think, straight away coming up over here. And then the perception, the color and all those things. And the feel, it perceives the feeling as well. What was my feeling? Feeling was pleasurable. And the volition regarding it, you know, what would I do with it? I eat, I use it, and I remain holding to that. That's the volition. And then it constructs the consciousness as consciousness. So whole faculty is now constructed on that particular thing. So the feeling is constructed. So therefore you know this feeling, my pleasurable one. So I perceive, I have the volition. So you go in the loop again, back to that same food. But when you actually eat it, you might see, oh, this is disgusting, this is not the one that I ate, right? But this, the whole thing was constructed. So if the food is different, then you get the suffering part as well, because you see, okay, this is not nice compared to the other one. So similarly, eye, ear, nose, tongue, body and mind, all those things, whenever enticing and pleasurable, that gets established. Then Buddha went to eye consciousness. So you can see there is this, the eye and the form, and then depending on the eye and form, eye consciousness come to arise. Meeting of the three is called contact, right? So we get the eye consciousness meet from these three. Similarly, there is ear consciousness, nose consciousness, tongue consciousness, body consciousness and mind consciousness. Whenever it is enticing and pleasurable, then this craving gets established. And then Buddha said, eye contact, ear contact, nose contact, tongue contact, body contact, mind contact in the world is agreeable and pleasurable. And there is this craving arises and establishes itself. So eye, there is this form, eye and form contacting, eye consciousness come to arise. And meeting of the three is called contact. Similarly, ear. Ear and the sound, ear consciousness. So meeting of the three. So when the contact is pleasurable, agreeable and pleasurable, there is this craving arises, gets established. So one would be sort of thinking, why? Well, how do I see the difference between this? There's a significant difference. The meaning of the contact, the function of that one is to meet these three. It meets I and the four, the I consciousness. It's just meeting it, meeting. So this has a further thing that when someone is coming in front of you, a nice person, a lovely person. So at that time, there is this contact. Because of the contact, there would be some sort of a feeling. And because of the feeling, you perceive that feeling as a pleasurable thing in your mind. So there is this volition. And then there is this reconstruction of this object from your own mind. It's not that object, not that person. It is constructing something similar you had before. You use that object to construct your own something. You know that some people go on trips somewhere in the world, and then they come back and they some sort of see some sort of picture. As soon as they see some sort of picture about that, you know, something similar, and they actually say, oh, yeah, I have been there, and all those things come to mind, your mind, and you talk about it, you know, the mental rambling is there, alright? So it was not that picture helped you to go into that. Now, you can see that picture even can be fallen on the floor, but still your mental rambling is there. You can see the disassociated with that. Similarly, that person who is coming in front of you might go here, may have a cough, but the thing that your mental rambling you have hasn't got any cough. That person can die with a car accident over there. You might look at it, but the rambling is there. It's not about that person. So it's going back to the contact, not to the object. That's what I'm trying to say here. So this contact, our mind is, when we see, is very significant. It's coming back to the loop, back to the contact, not to the object. Object will allow you to sustain it, because then you get another object coming back, you get another contact. Right? So there is this looping over there. And then the feeling born of eye contact, ear contact, nose contact, tongue contact, body contact and mind contact. So we discussed the feeling part already. And then the perception. So remember in the same example we were talking about the perception. What one feel is what one perceive. What one perceive is what one appear. So one would have seen something, with that there is this contact. With the contact there was some sort of a feeling. Whatever thing you felt is the one you perceive. Whatever you perceive is the one you apprehend. So it's going in that direction. So there is this perception of sight, sound, smell, taste and so on. So whenever they are agreeable and pleasurable, there is this craving arises and establishes itself. So the perception part is a bit difficult for someone who has not reached high concentration to see, but you can sort of get the understanding to a certain extent. But perceptions are very well, you can see when you go into a very high concentration and then you are sort of living on the perception only, no feeling, nothing about the material thing, and you can see this in this worlds of space is infinite, consciousness is infinite sort of thing. And the best one is out of this is the neither the plane of nothing, where you live only from perception, and you're so happy because you don't have any material things about to think, or if you contemplate about material things, you are fallen in that concentration. And mind becomes so vast, it's only perception, it's really good one in that sense. And then the volition in regarding the sight, sound, smell, taste, tangible mind object in the world agreeable and pleasurable, and there is this craving arises and establishes itself. So over here you can see we talk about the person coming in front of us, and then we talk about the feeling, and there is this perception about that person, that color, that those are the things we grasp, the color of a person, very significant for us. And so having grasped those things, because of the perception lead to volition. The volition is that in Pali it says iti vikami su samyutto viriti bhavitu ajo sanya ayam chetana. That is this about the sensual things, for example, you are connected with it. It's like if it is a food, for example, if you have a food and this, let's say, excrement. So you are not connected with the excrement, it's not mine. The other one, I would have to regard this one, this food, tasty sort of thing, it's mine, right? So there is this connection with that one, connected with it. Etipikamisu samyutto viharati. So you connected and you live with that one, you use it. We don't use the excrement, we throw it out. This one we use it. Ajosanna means remain holding to that. So that is actually volition. How one would define volition is that's the way to define the volition if someone asks what is volition. What volition does is coordinate all the other mental states. Like it coordinates the feeling. What was my feeling? The perception I have. So it's coordinate this one and it's actually lead to this idea, the self. While it is not self, I regard that thing as mine. Regarding an external object, there is this appropriation of external objects. Having seen that one, appropriation means that person actually didn't give you any permission. No one actually say to you, look at my body, look at my body, this part and so on. But people do that. People look at that parts, body parts, right? So that's the appropriation. Without the permission from the owner, one would take that one and invading the privacy and so on. And having done that one, and one would take it for my completely, exclusively for my use, that is leading to this something, there is this something called I making because of that one, that this is mine. And some people are saying pleasure is mine and so on. The normal statement in the Europeans normally talk, right? Pleasure is mine, but I don't know whether you have heard it. So we do this one, the I making. If you apply to your internal body, there is my making. I ahankara. For the external ones, mamankara. That is my making. I making and my making. We do that one. The volition is the culprit over there. Volition do that part. So there is this will that this is mine. Although it is not yours, you might actually inherit even a tree while traveling on the road. That tree is good. It's good for me and it is mine. If somebody is coming and cutting it down, then you actually see that I am actually possessing in that one. That's why I am actually upset about that one. The Buddha asked monks, there are these grasses outside. Do you monks get upset when people come and cut these grasses and take it to home? No, sir. Why? Why not? Because it's not mine. It's not ours. Right? But we even hold grasses on our land, you know, sort of thing. We put the water and sort of thing, right? Even the grasses may not be belonging to you. It may be in somebody else's house. Because it's nice, you clinging to that one as well. That's our nature. So, regarding these material things, cars, houses and all those things, there is this I making. So, volition does that sort of thing. So, whenever it is, you know, enticing and pleasurable, yes, the craving gets established over there. And then the craving for the sights, sounds, smells. So, remember that we talked about eye, ear, nose, tongue, body before, and then the consciousness, and then the contact, and then the feeling, and then we talk about this, the perception and the volition, and now we talk about the other side, the external object, the sight object, the sound, the smell, taste, tangible objects, mind objects, that is Dhamma. So we have craving for Dhamma as well. We fight for that one. You know, the people kill each other for this Dhamma because of the religious reasons. You can see it is the Dhamma, craving for these things. Arises itself. And then there's thinking. Thinking of sights, sounds, smell, taste, tangible mind object in the world is agreeable and pleasurable. And there this craving arises and establishes itself. Vitakka, thinking. We think about that one. So you have seen something and keep on applying the mind to that one. So when you keep on applying the mind, consciousness gets established there. Whenever consciousness gets established there, then the mind and matter gets established. If there is mind and matter, then you get this whole mass of suffering, you know, nama rupa, salayatana, all those things. It is happening. And then the vichara, you see that the pondering of sights and sounds, that is, it's like thinking is like a bee approaching the flower. And the guy rooting around in the vichara, vichara, so it's maintaining it. It's like if you want to see a king, for example, you need some sort of introduction from a minister or someone. If you want to see a prime minister, you can't just go and see the prime minister, right? Well, normally it is the case. So you need some sort of associate, you know, known to him. So there is this introduction, the initial application. Once you know to that person, he will allow everybody else allow you to come in, right? So vichara is like that, pondering. You keep on applying to this one, maintaining it. So whenever those things are enticing and pleasurable, then the craving gets established. So that means if I think, when I think about the sensual something, I keep on thinking about it, well, I'm happy. So the craving gets established more and more. So that's the second noble truth. And it's again, you can see how deep it is. So those are the things, if you are thinking about the examples, with that many vast abstraction leading to many, many examples over there. So this suffering, you can see how vast it is. Because how it is getting established is this was, then the suffering we are talking about, you know, the implication of that one, the consequence, is that large. So, next week we can actually see the cessation of suffering part. So, the meditation part that we did today, the arising and passing away phenomena, is covered the arising part and the passing one, but these are making it broader, you know, that the mind exercise is becoming bigger and bigger in this case. So, if you have any questions, so we will stop for today then.